we built this city on rock and roll. Built this city. We built this city on rock and roll.
Good morning. It is a sunny morning here in Hastings. You're listening to KDWA Radio. I'm News Director Mike Root, and it's Community In-Depth. Today we have City of Hastings representatives Jerry Backlund and Craig Schultz from the Building Safety Department. It's a nice sunny day outside, gentlemen, but we're going to talk things that are going to be a little bit not so nice when the weather changes. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning. Sunny day out, so everybody's trying to get caught up on stuff, whether it's cleaning up the yards or guys working on roofs and all that other stuff. So.
Yep, and we've got good weather today. But inevitably, we're looking at the start of winter coming up here soon. I know that's a bad word, and the S word, I won't say it, so it doesn't do it a whole lot. So we're going to talk home safety. We're going to talk safety around town and the things that you can do as a homeowner or just a resident in town to help make your area a little bit safer during the winter months. Craig, I'd like to start out with you, if I could. One of the big things we got coming up is the end of daylight savings time, and that's also a time for other things that should be done. You want to explain that a little bit?
Well, a lot of the times you want to go out and make sure that, I guess you get your furnace updated, checked out. And you're probably using it already, but a lot of times you want to make sure that they clean filters are clear. You know, check gas lines, things like that, the vent terminations.
What kind of things can go wrong with a furnace as it sits over the summer?
Well, I don't really know if anything can go wrong. Maybe your gas valves and that won't open and close the way they should if you start it up, you know, after it sits all summer long. I suppose the venting and the old style vents where they go through the roof, you know, that could get debris inside somehow, or sure. You know, the termination at the top could come loose and things fall in, leaves or whatever fall in it, stuff like that. So
what is the generally accepted lifespan for a furnace system?
Well, I think they say, 10 years now? It's about maximum.
Yeah, if you can get 15, you're doing well.
Yeah.
But I was sitting here thinking one of the things that can occur with a furnace is they have an electronic glow plug for igniting the flame in the burner.
Right, right.
And that can build up with debris from, you know, just lighting and burning.
Right.
And consequently, it gets to be 20 below out, and your furnace gets the demand for heat. What happens? You have nothing.
Right.
So if you can get a service tune-up on your heating equipment now, it might save you from not having to endure the hardships when it is 20 below outside.
From personal experience, I also know that those glow plugs can be very fragile. If they get jarred a little bit somehow, if you're doing some other kind of maintenance, which we recommend that professionals do, don't be
right, exactly. Right.
Toying around in there. But for any reason, I've run into a case once where the thing just kind of snapped. It was very fragile. Mm-hmm. It carried a lot of current, and up to that point it worked. But once it went, there was nothing there.
Yeah. And the newer furnaces create condensation if it's a power vented sealed combustion, and then that a lot of times goes out the rim of the house. So then the clearance is, you have to be careful where the pipe, you know, where the exhaust clearance is above grade. They want at least 12 inches. Well, sometimes, you know, your leaves, whatever can blow in there, or who knows what, but even ice buildup as the thing runs, if it gets really cold out, you can get ice buildup in there, and then eventually that could restrict that opening, so then your furnace won't start or won't run. So
you have to be
careful of that too. So that's some things you need to check. Snow banks, if snow drifts in the back corner or something, you have to watch
personal experience that happened to me a few years ago.
For people that might not be aware of what we're talking about, is that those two white pipes that usually come out the sidewall of your houses?
PVC
one comes safe out, and one kind of goes up and hooks over.
It has a gooseneck on it or whatever, right?
Yep. Keep those clean.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing to do during this time with daylight savings coming on is Fire prevention professionals always recommend checking the batteries on your smoke and carbon monoxide detectors.
And I actually just changed mine because if I don't, the things are going to start chirping at 3 a.m. when I'm trying to sleep.
I think they're programmed that way. They're engineered to do that.
And there are newer ones that have a 10-year battery in it. They're a sealed unit if that's what you've got in your home, is, you know, strictly battery. And if you break down the cost, yeah, they may cost a little more up front. But if you figure out two batteries a year, because I change mine twice a year, is $5. So over 10 years, you're
about a wash.
Yeah, you're $50. And sometimes if you get a deal on them, you can actually come out ahead. So the other thing with your smoke and carbon monoxide alarms to keep in mind is that your carbon monoxide alarm has a life expectancy of approximately 7 years.
Okay.
They generally have a date stamped on them, so check the date, see if you're good. Same thing with smoke alarms. Smoke alarms are good for approximately 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And even though you can hit your test button and it may chirp, it doesn't mean it isn't going to function in the event of a fire.
Well, go cook bacon. That'll help.
And don't be afraid.
Don't be talking sacrilege about bacon.
Oh, I'm not. I'm just saying it's a good test, a field test for your smoke alarm.
Yeah, and you know, if you have hardwired, you want to replace it with a hardwired unit. They do sell units that come with a series of adapters, so you don't have to take and change the pigtail out and call an electrician in to do that. You find the correct adapter for your home.
I was going to ask about that. Yeah, I've got the hardwired ones in my home, and it's probably been a little over 10 years now. I need to check those, but I hadn't because I have to go find the exact close to the same model, or but if they have adapters, makes it a whole lot easier.
Right.
Yeah. Or, you know, even if you take an old one, snap a picture of what you've got for a connection, and you can try and match it if it's still available. Chances are it may not be. But generally, I've found that the ones with the adapters, you can find one that will work.
Nice.
Don't be afraid to test them either. You know, push a button every month just to make sure. Sometimes the batteries, even on those, I've heard some of the people say, I put a 10-year battery or a smoke detector good for 10 years in, and it was good for two, and then it would quit working. So just make sure you check them and test them periodically so you know that they're actually working, functioning.
Yeah. All right. And if you are in a home that was built maybe 20 years ago, or if you're not sure about the age of your smoke detector, if you take one down, if there's no date stamped on it, I guarantee it's got to be replaced.
Right. Right.
Or if they're yellow.
Yeah, that's usually another good indicator, too. So,
yeah, yellow is not a good smoke detector color. They should be white or off-white, usually.
Correct.
Unless you are very artistic and want to go paint your own, which we also don't recommend.
No, it says right on it, do not paint. So,
the other thing, kind of tying in with smoke detectors, I have noticed over the past few years we've had at least one story a year where a home in the wintertime has been completely destroyed by an explosion. And they've come back to find out that the vent on the gas meter is not cleared. There's a little valve just before your gas meter. It has a little round thing coming out the bottom with a screen on it. And if people aren't checking those to make sure that snow is clear, it makes for a buildup of gas in the home somehow.
Correct.
And maybe it all goes downstairs when your furnace turns on. The house goes for a ride all over the block.
Yeah, I actually lost a good friend to it when his home exploded here 12 years or so ago.
Right.
There was an issue where there was a leak inside the house, and he went down to see what was going on. You know, he had sent his wife and the son to go spend the night with somebody else, and early in the morning he went there to try and figure out what was going on, and his house exploded, and he lost his life.
Right.
So it's.
Did they trace it back to that vent?
Well, no. It actually happened in the fall, and there was probably some kind of leak in a gas line inside the house that, you know, had it been able to be detected. The other bad thing too was that it was propane. And propane's heavier than natural gas,
so it
was settling down lower, and he wasn't aware of it. So
that's another thing too with propane gas. It would keep your. If you can, keep the gas tanks out of the main garage of the house and put them in a shed or something, or leave it sit outside somewhere so you don't have it within your residence part of the house because they can leak or bleed off, and it doesn't take much for propane to ignite.
Exactly. You know? So if someone is in their house and they smell gas,
get out, yeah. Call the fire department, call the gas company, call 911.
Yeah. Don't mess with it.
Don't do it in a house and don't play with it.
Exactly. Moving on, we're moving kind of quick, but we have a lot of ground to cover. You're listening to a Community In Depth with Craig Schultz and Jerry Backlund. I almost mixed your names up, and I apologize. Moving on, for other things to check for the winter, you know, making sure your house is wet, ready for the season, we have cleaning our dryer vents. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, they will, you know, accumulate lint on the inside. Some people, they change their dryer out, and, well, they go and get one of those kits they sell at the big box store.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the flexi hose and all that other stuff. Unfortunately, that stuff is not approved by the building code. You want to use a smooth pipe, you know, nice round smooth pipe. You know, make your connection to get to your dryer with a series of elbows if you can. If not, they do make like an aluminum flex pipe that'll connect onto it. You know, the accordion stuff that they sell, first of all, the product itself isn't listed, but your dryer vent is supposed to be 4 inches, and that accordion type material is actually 3 inches.
So okay.
So you've lost an inch out of your ventilation, so it's going to take you longer to dry your clothes.
Right.
It accumulates lint on it, so you've increased your risk of a fire hazard.
Like a slinky.
Yeah. the other thing is you want to check your outside to make sure that there isn't a screen on the outside that's accumulating all the lint and stuff on the outside.
Now, when you say screen, you have the pipe coming out of the house, then you have the little hood over it to mm-hmm. direct stuff down and prevent rain from getting in.
Mm-hmm.
Are you talking about a screen inside or having the whole hood screened over?
At the termination, there's generally a screen on like your bath fan vents and stuff like that.
Right.
So if you do use that type of termination, remove that.
How do we then prevent small animals and birds
from... There's still a backdraft damper on that outside, so there's a flipper on that, yep. So that opens and closes.
And when the dryer is in operation, it's probably going to keep any small animals from crawling in there just because of the heat. The issue that I run into, and I'll use my house a lot because I live there. When my house was constructed, they provided an access point for that vent, but the backside of the pipe is right up against the wall. You can't get behind it with the adapter to go from the wall to the dryer. How does someone deal with something like that?
Well, again, I go back, because this is how I did mine, is I used the steel elbows that they mm-hmm. are adjustable, and you can get them to go around and fit and get them stuck up. If you do have an issue, like I say, they do make kind of like a flexible aluminum product that you mm-hmm. can use. One thing, if the homeowner is looking to see, they do make, check it, see if it meets a UL standard. The one that I have is UL 2158A. Which it has to do with dryer duct connectors.
Okay.
And if it meets that standard, then yeah, it's perfectly safe to go and use. But we've seen that metallic stuff, you know, it looks like a potato chip bag.
Yeah.
That's no bueno. And then there's the other kind of a white plastic type of stuff. And again, that's no bueno either.
That's so, just plastic over like a coiled
string, yeah.
Right. Yeah. And keep in mind too, if your dryer is farther away from the termination point, you're probably going to have more lint build up, you know, built up within that pipe system because it's longer.
Yeah.
So that, and a lot of the dryer manufacturers will say how far you can actually vent, you know, how long they say that, you know, the distance that you can terminate it at. So you have to kind of watch that. So if you buy a different dryer, you might have to check that out to see, to make sure that the length is adequate with the dryer manufacturer itself.
It improves efficiency and is within the design standards for that unit.
Right.
Kind of moving on, it's not so much a thing that really is dire, but you talk about draining draining garden hoses, setting up your outdoor taps for winter. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, if you have the hose connected to your frost-free and it's full of water, it can still freeze back into that pipe into the house. So basically, it's not allowing the water to drain out.
So basically, between the outside of the house and where it's right. connected inside to the plumbing system.
Right, because right. the frost-free generally has 12 inches, 9 inches, or 12 inches of open pipe that the plunger or whatever is 12 inches back into your house. So when you close it, that 12 inches drains out to the mm-hmm. outside. So then,
but if your hose is connected, it's not
right. It's not going to drain, and that'll freeze in, and then it'll split, and then you'll have water issues.
Especially when you don't know about it, you go next spring to connect that hose, turn it on, and you're wondering why all the water is going in the wall.
Right.
Yeah, and generally, you know, most houses that have been built within the last 30 years will have a shut-off valve in the house with a port that you take off.
Mm-hmm.
You take that off and open your outside faucet and, you know, have a bucket there, and then you can drain that water back out of your pipe going inside if you don't happen to have a frost-proof faucet connection on it.
Right.
And I just drain all mine back as a matter of habit just because I want to make sure.
And it also saves you a little bit money at the same time to roll your hose off its carrier and make sure it's all drained out too.
Right.
You don't want water sitting in your hose all winter. You might store it in the garage or something, but still, it saves you a little bit of money because then you're not bursting your hose from having it freeze also.
Right.
Now, before we get done here, we've got just a couple of minutes left. Let's talk a little bit about how residents and homeowners, their actions kind of tie in with what the city requires when we talk about shoveling your sidewalk, snow removal, and that kind of thing. What is the city's position on and taking care of those maintenance items?
Well, the snow is supposed to be cleared off within 48 hours. And I know last year we had a couple episodes where we had rain and then snow on top and all that other stuff.
That's fun.
Yeah, it makes it treacherous for everyone, especially guys like you and me, Mike, that are trying to take advantage of AARP when we can. So, but, you know, de-icing agents, you know, get the snow cleared off, get some de-icing agent. I kind of prefer using like a calcium chloride or a magnesium chloride for de-icing rather than the old sodium chloride or
salt.
On the bag, it'll say halite, which is basically just mine salt, simply for the fact that it will work at a lower temperature. I mean, a lot of these, you know, calcium chlorides and magnesium chlorides will work to down to 15 below, whereas, you know, salt kind of stops working at about 20.
Yep.
So it works a little better at de-icing, makes it safer.
This is Community In-Depth. You're listening to KDWA Radio, AM 1460, FM 97.7.
We built this city. We built this city on rock and roll. We built this city. We built this city on rock and roll. Say it.